Aloha.
I know a lot of male porn stars.
I never encountered a mom that even, like, grazed her hand past my dick.
You can't look at somebody's toes while they're making...
Hello and welcome. We're back from theballerlifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brian Beckner. Thank you very much for joining the show. Episode 340 of the program. Very stoked to have you guys in the game, listening to us each and every week. We love your feedback. We love that you listen. If you are not already, join our subscription exclusive subscribers only shows. You get about one of those every week. You can do that at theballerlifestyle.com. There's a link at the top of the page. Click there. Also, if you would like to reach out, talk about anything we discuss here, mailbag at theballerlifestyle.com is the email address. The voicemail number is 949-464-TBLS. I am joined now, as I am each and every week, by Ed Daly. Ed, what's up?
Hello. How are you? I'd like to just get to this movie. I have thoughts.
Okay. We are also joined, as we are occasionally, by Jason Stewart, friend of the show. Jason, what's up?
Hello, everybody.
Signature sign on. Always good to have Jason on the scene. We're doing a movie this week, Valley Girl. But before we get to that, I want to knock out a couple voicemails, emails, if I can find them. I had them open here a second ago.
I have no access to the list of voicemails, no access to who.
Neither do I, Jason.
But I will say that there's a 98% chance Manny and Gardena is one of them.
Manuel and Gardenia? I don't know because I don't pre-listen to him. Let me see here.
He's so easy to hate. Your time he likes to waste. His calls are far from great. His calls are far from great. He's such a stupid fuck. He seems down on his luck. His voicemails really suck. His voicemails really suck. No one's enjoying him. He's so annoying. Plus so fucking boring and worthless. But he's got nothing else to do. And he's even worse than Ish. His thoughts are useless shit. He's fat and got big tits. He's Manuel in Gardenia.
One voicemail this week doesn't appear to be from Manuel. Manuel's taking the week off. Little vacay for Manuel. He's probably too busy calling local radio shows and getting placed in their promos, because you hear Manuel on the local sports talk landscape very often, I notice. Let's check out this one voicemail.
Hey, guys. I'm finally getting caught up with everything, and I'm listening to the program. And Brian's talking about his porn brush with fame, which he didn't name the dude's name, which I'm kind of wondering why he didn't.
I don't know, like all male porno actors, except for like the biggies, no pun intended, you know, Pedro Del Norte, Ron Jeremy, like the classic.
I think I only know Ron Jeremy by name.
Right.
I don't know anybody. And these days, I don't look at any professional porn.
Nobody knows male porn stars by name, but I know this was a black guy, and he was in a lot of pornos at the time. And all of us recognize him at the same time. So it's not that I want to protect the innocent here, LSU. I just don't know his name. I didn't know his name. No one did.
Wait, reminded me of my first trip to Vegas, and they had a porn convention going on in our hotel, and we met Jessica Drake, which I think is one of Trump's, whatever he want to call it, sex Sexcapades or whatever the hell it was. And then we
Jason Stewart, you familiar with the work of early 2000s porn star Jessica Drake?
No, I mean, I'm very familiar with Steve Drake. I mean, which contradicts what you just said. I know a lot of male porn stars.
You do?
Circa late 80s and 90s. I mean, I was an encyclopedia for male porn stars. Just ask me any question.
I don't know Steve Drake. I mean, that's a deep pull.
I would definitely Bing. Go into your. I know
Evan Drake, the boss on Cheers for one season, played by what's his name, Tom Skerritt.
I didn't know that.
But put an incognito. Go to Bing, without the with no restrictions, and just type in Steve Drake. He's probably got 1,500 credits.
Hold on. For Jason's recommendation, I'm not going to do the thing where I find Bing. I don't even know how to Bing, so I just did incognito. Steve Drake, I'm going to go to images.
What's incognito? Is there a different mode? Yeah. I just looked up Steve Drake.
Do I have to type in porn star? Steve Drake, porn star.
He's like the quintessential porn star.
Oh, my God.
Mustache, yeah.
He's kind of got a he's like an extremely poor man's Burt Reynolds.
Is he any of these Steve Drakes I just sent to you guys? These are the first four Steve Drakes that showed up in my Google image search.
Let's see here. Hasn't come through on my end. Sometimes it takes a while for those pictures to come through. Yeah. I mean, he's no Tom Byron or any other of the household names from the 1980s. I got to be honest, I don't recognize him.
Steel from that was through Stern. Right. I don't think I know it. Who's the guy he used to have on that would really style it?
Oh, what? Nick something.
Yes.
Nick, I'm raining. What was his catchphrase? He had a catchphrase. I'm raining droplets or something like that.
My whole thing with Stern, I mean, I've been listening to Stern since I think fifth grade, but I never found it funny with the porn stars. I mean, when I was in seventh grade, I thought it was kind of hot, but who cares?
Yeah.
But I never found it funny. But the male porn stars, when you did stuff with them, I found it funny.
Well, because they're big dummies.
I would suggest Netflix or Amazon has the story of the male porn star from the 80s and 90s that had HIV and didn't tell anybody and continued to make hundreds of movies.
So I remember that guy. He had a ponytail.
Mark Wallace.
And he had a ponytail, right?
Yes, a very distinctive penis.
Oh, he had like a...
it down there, a porn star from the 80s with a ponytail.
And it had a hook. He had a hook dick, right?
Like a banana.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that guy. I don't think I'm going to watch that. That sounds like a real bummer, Jason.
It's dropping loads is what that guy said.
Dropping loads. What'd I say? Rain and droplets?
Yeah. You're thinking of droplets because 2020.
Right. And I hate that word, by the way. Yeah. It's none of these guys. I had to add porn star to my search, Ed.
None of those looked like porn type. No. I just thought it was a funny group.
Definitely not.
You're referring to Nick Manning, by the way. Who dropped
it. Wow. Jason. Excellent. Excellent knowledge.
No relation, by the way.
Who knows?
Right. One of Archie's sons.
he's not Cooper's older brother?
No.
Okay. Let's let LSU Lala continue here.
Shared a cab with Playmate. What's her name? Miriam Gonzalez, I think.
Oh, hold on. We all got to Google that now.
Miriam Gonzalez.
Miriam Gonzalez. Remember back in the day, like, being a playmate was a big fucking deal. They would be, I wouldn't say household name. I don't know. This is hard too. I don't feel like I've gotten the actual, March 2001.
Oh,
Mm-hmm. This is very, they would like alternate like between blondes and brunettes back then. There'd be, or maybe it was like, yeah, two, it would be like
the soft lighting.
Right. It would be like 2-1 blondes. Okay. This is who he shared a cab with. Everybody caught up? Everybody Googled?
Yeah, she kind of looks like Marie Osmond.
Is this the Uber pool? I mean, how do you share a cab with random?
That's a good question. That's a good question, because back then you didn't really do that. Unless it was a playmate and you're like, hey, do you want to ride to Caesars? We'll get you a ride.
And that was with Brian. That's the guy that you know that I know through Travis. He was there. And I think he got her number, actually, but she never did answer when he called. But anyway.
For those listening, for those that want the pop-up video version of this, LSU Lala is talking about a buddy of his that was the play-by-play guy for UC Santa Barbara basketball, that Travis and I went to a Big West tournament game one time, and he's like, hey, I think you guys know my buddy Chris, LSU Lala. There you go.
I was just curious what porn star Brian met and or saw in the pool.
Easy on the Met.
And then swam in his filth. And then what other kind of encounters you guys have had in Vegas as far as famous people?
Wow. I'm sure Jay Stu's got a lot of stories. I once ran into Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan gambling in Vegas, and they had a big crowd around them, and it was really exciting. That's probably about as good as it gets for me.
I told you I was in some club at the top of somewhere, and Anthony Michael Hall, and also not together, and Damon Wayans were there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Jay Stu,
didn't talk to him or anything.
Jay used to go on those trips with to the fights and stuff until somebody decided you were bad for their look and didn't invite you anymore. Do you have any good stories from back in the day? Anything you can share with the group?
Of just like celebrities? Nah. I mean, nothing too notable. I've had a lot of celebrity encounters, but I do remember being at this trendy restaurant on La Cienega in college.
Mm.
And Jason Alexander, in the height of Seinfeld, was eating with his family.
Are you talking about the Stinking Rose?
It's right next to the Stinking Rose. It's no longer there. Remember the one where the waiters and waitresses would get up and dance?
That sounds like my worst nightmare.
I don't recall.
Yeah. Like right in the middle of it, they'd be like YMCA, and the entire place would just be them dancing.
I went to one of those places in New York.
Awful.
It was awful. And because you feel their desperation.
Awful.
You know, like they clearly want to get noticed. So you'll see people really selling out some bullshit song like YMCA.
Horrible. Yeah, because they're all out of work actors.
Yeah, performers of some kind, and they want their break.
Yeah.
It's going to come during your dinner.
Totally. A producer's going to notice them there. In maybe Steve Drake will sit down and offer him a part in his next movie. Well, thank you for that, LSU. I guess not sure if that was a letdown for you or not. I don't know the porn star that I saw. He's a black guy. He was in every porn in the early 2000s. I don't know his name. Jason Stewart, name some black guys that were in the early 2000s pornos. Late 90s.
None really come quickly to mind by name. Lex Steele by far.
Yeah, it wasn't him. Him I would know. Him I can't remember. I don't know this guy's name.
It could have been one of the Mandingo brothers.
Oh, boy. What? There's brothers?
Everyone knows Mandingo.
There's brothers that are called that?
I know of the term. I didn't know.
That's, wow. I mean, yeah, Google search.
Is
Google
this like Gallagher and Gallagher 2 situation?
Oh, Leo Gallagher and his brother. Yeah, Gallagher 2.
Smash watermelons with their penis.
Wow, incredible! Now it might have been one of those guys. I don't know. It was a black guy who was in a lot of pornos in the 2000s. We all recognized him at the same time. I don't know his name. I'm sorry. LSU. Also, you sent me a bunch of questions for a potential Ask Brian Red Circle show. So I'm gonna save those. If I get enough, you put like 5 in here. So that's actually close to enough to do a show. Some other people have expressed interest but haven't sent emails. So if you guys want to do a short, brief Q&A episode, a lot of times people hit me up on my Instagram DMs and they have a comment or a question. And I just thought it might be fun to do like a clearinghouse for all that stuff, because a lot of people have like little things that they like to ask about. So if you guys want to do that, just send an email, mailbag@theballerlifestyle.com, and just put like ask Brian or something in the subject. And then we'll put a little show together for that. We are talking this week about a 1983.
So Nick, wait.
Yes.
Side note, just to close the loop, you know, I want to close the loop on what we just talked about.
Yep.
So the restaurant on La Siena.
Lowry's Prime Rib.
It was right next to Lowry's too. And it was called Ed DeBevick's.
Oh, that was a chain.
And yeah, it's still one in Chicago. I didn't know it was still around. It's no longer in Los Angeles.
I think my old roommate used to have sex with a waitress from there, or she either worked there or she liked to go there, because I remember him saying the name.
I guarantee if she worked there, she performed Love Shack.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Is it like a 50s diner concept?
It is.
Yeah.
But then they sing like regular tunes that they could dance to.
So what judge ordered you to go there, or what kind of bet did you lose that had you ending up there, Jason Stewart?
No, it was a trendy spot to go to.
According to who?
What trend? Yeah. Do you find that in Highlights magazine? Who's going to that thing?
It was a destination spot to go to in the early 90s.
Absolutely. Okay. This week we're talking about the 1983. This is a movie I had not seen before until last night. The 1983 Nick Cage. I think this is his first thing he ever did. It's launched.
Well, Fast Times. He was part of the crew. The No Shirt, No Shoes, No Dice.
Right. Well, that was around the same time though. 1983.
Oh, this movie clearly came after, because they were like, hey, what if we made Fast Times, but take out the laughs and the interesting characters?
Interesting. Let's play the trailer. Now on Blu-ray.
How dare me? How could you?
For sure. Cody. Besides, it's totally gnarly birth control.
I can't stand it.
Okay, so he's awesome.
Valley Girl.
She's out there somewhere.
This is the story of a boy from Hollywood who never dreamed the girl he'd want most was down here.
Hello.
Killer soundtrack.
Who invited you?
Dang.
Oh, wow, you mean you have to be invited? Well, that explains it.
What?
Well, everyone is dressed for it. See, if I had been invited, I would have known this was a costume party.
Right.
It's the story of a girl from the valley who never dreamed she'd ever be seen with a boy from over here.
Like, I'm not getting out of this car.
All right, but when they attack the car, save the radio. So when can I see you again?
I'm here with you now.
I know.
Nick Cage is kind of a punk, but he's got a sort of a Flock of Seagulls haircut. They didn't really go for it. I think they wanted to, like, not make him pretty.
And the people who try to pull them apart.
Like, don't you think they have parties over there? Oh, where? At the zoo?
This geek that she's with could scar her for life.
God, life?
If you think she's confused, you should see her father.
I'm together now. Be right there.
Julie's cool. Randy's hot. She's from the valley. He's not. Valley Girl.
It is interesting that how they like paint the difference between the valley and the Hollywood area at the time. I know Hollywood was very scary, but was the valley ever like such a clean, proper place to hang out, Jason?
Well, I think that it extends out now. I mean, up when you get up to Calabasas and that's
pretty nice. Yeah,
it's really nice. But like they mention, like, let's go cruise Van Nuys Boulevard in this one.
Terrifying.
And if the neighborhood's anywhere near Van Nuys Boulevard, there is nothing nice about that. But yeah, I thought that that part of this movie was actually accurate. You know, most movies about Los Angeles take liberties with the geography. You know, you'll be in like, you'll be in Malibu driving, and then 10 seconds later, you'll be like Skid Row. Like, they just don't, they don't think people know or care. At the very least, this movie stayed true to the kind of the geography of things. I respected that. And that first panoramic shot, by the way, which in 2020, it would have been a great drone shot.
Yeah, that was like a chopper shot or a crane shot.
It was like a bad chopper shot.
Yep.
Like, it was like unsteady, but I loved it just because it showed Hollywood and into the valley in the early 80s, which is just like very like nostalgic for me.
Yeah.
I just like all that.
Well, and there wasn't shit out there. It's crazy. It's crazy to think how much things have developed. Valley Girl is a 1983 American teen romantic comedy film directed by Martha Coolidge. It stars Nick Cage, Deborah Foreman. She looked familiar. I don't know what else she was in.
Who likes to fuck from Kill Bill?
Well, yeah, Michael Bowen. Yeah, he's Tommy. The boyfriend was the pussy wagon guy from Kill Bill and a whole bunch of other movies.
No, he's been in a lot of movies. And I think Tarantino put him in like four movies.
Pee-wee Herman's girlfriend's in it, and she shows her boobies.
Yeah.
Valley Girl was released in April 29th, 1983. The plot is based loosely on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. That's interesting because you never meet Randy's family.
The Montagues.
What's funny is that I wrote down this note. It's funny that they bring up Romeo and Juliet because I wrote down, for those who haven't seen the movie, other than Romeo and Juliet and West Side Story and about 50 other movies, it's one of the rare movies about an attractive character popular amongst her group faced with the impossible choice of their popular friends and boyfriend and the outcast from the other side of the tracks.
It is a weird dichotomy that shows up a lot of movies where people's friends are like, oh no, if you date that person, I mean, it's not like he was in prison. It's not like he was a petty thief. It's just that he lived in a sort of a different place that was like 15 minutes away.
He goes to Hollywood High.
Over the hill. Yeah. He goes to Hollywood High with Slash.
I don't get it. There was no redeeming qualities. There was a little bit of charm to him, but she and her friends, they never like gave you a reason to like any of them.
No, so
they were all kind of shitty. She was especially shitty.
Yeah, she
didn't do anything wrong, and the third act hinged on whether or not she'd choose between him and her friends. There was not like he was just a guy.
Yeah,
and she chose wrong. She chose wrong.
Totally. Yeah. She, I made a note. I mean, that's farther down in the movie, but I made a note about that, how he's like, does all these grand gestures to get her back. He didn't do anything to lose her. All he was fucking nice to her. He was very romantic. He climbed through a window and hid in a shower to meet her.
After he got beaten up.
Right. Who knows if somebody could have come in that bathroom and dropped anchor while he was in there. Like, it's like he took a real.
He implied he had been there quite a while. We saw a little snippet of it, but it seemed like he was in there for a long time.
He was in there quite a while. There were people doing lines. There were people smoking weed. There were people talking about giving hand jobs. There was all sorts of things happening. And I thought he was, when he finally encountered her, I thought he was very romantic. He was like, let's go. He's like, leave with me. Where do you want to go? Anywhere. What do you want to do? Anything. He just wanted to be with her. I thought he was very sweet.
Right, and he was nice.
He was very nice to her. And then later in the movie, she fucks him over. And she immediately, she's also kind of fucks over Tommy, in my opinion. She, Tommy, while a piece of shit, she dumped flat-footed and then just decides, oh, I'll take him back because it's good for my look. It's good for my image at school. I think Julie is low-key the villain of this movie.
She's awful. And also, she's given off, I know it's a style, and I saw a picture of her, and she was an attractive woman from the pictures I saw, but she's given off real mom energy. her hair and look.
So she's she's got a feathered haircut, which is does look very momish, but was a style of the time. And that's one thing I noticed about this movie is as you're watching it, you're like, wow, they were real over the top trying to capture the 80s vibe in this movie where every like all the jocks have popped collars. Everybody's wearing Sassoons. There's fucking Sassoons as far as the eye can see. I mean, it's very, I'm sure there were some fucking Reeboks in there somewhere.
It's not the most elegant movie of filmmaking.
Yeah, but you forget this is how people dressed. That was just a norm. It looks like they're trying to capture a time. That was the time.
To capture Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It was a poor man's Fast Times.
One of the notes that I have written down was that it looks like they're being ironic with the costumes, with 80s costumes, but those were actual modern day clothes and modern day hairstyles. There was at least a dozen people in that movie that had a long sleeve button down with a sweater vest, and then they would pull the long sleeves up into their bicep.
Totally.
That was a look back then. It was a look. But I thought that was kind of like, I know Ed's going to tell us why he just hates this movie, but like, and I'm usually the guy that hates the movie, but I did find a charm to this. I think maybe because I have a soft spot for Los Angeles movies and that nostalgia. And I think it did kind of stay true to that time. If you were living during that time, the soundtrack has some incredible music. And they really pushed it down our throats.
It was crazy that they were able to curate such a soundtrack at the time. It's really stunning.
They played songs from beginning to end. Like they just didn't cut 10 seconds out of songs and put them in their movie. They like played the entire, and I think that Million Years or whatever song.
Yeah, the Plimsolls.
Million Miles Away, they played twice.
Yep.
But no, I kind of like, it was charming. It has a lot of flaws.
Was it charming, that last song, Johnny, Are You Queer? That didn't hold up so well.
Yeah, you can't make that today. You can't make that song.
I mean, you could make it. You just can't put it in a movie. I feel the same, I think. I had never seen this movie, and I just saw that it was free on Prime, and I'm like, I hear a lot about this movie, and I wasn't sure what to expect, and looking back, I don't know what I expected, but it's a very like earnest romantic comedy. Like it's, I don't know. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I thought Nicolas Cage is really good. I thought it was a good movie. I wasn't really into Julie or her friends. Obviously I was way into her friend's mom, Beth.
Oh yeah.
And I would like to get into that a little bit because I didn't really get what was happening. She said, so they're having a party, right? And everybody's there and they're like low key, like sneaking booze, which is cool. There's a lot happening. It was always a little weird to go to somebody's party when the parents were there. But the mom at one point is like, I'm Stacy's stepmom. Did I catch that right? And she's like, ever since Jim died, she's been really competitive with me. But it's the other way around. The mom was definitely trying to fuck her wannabe boyfriend. And all I can ask is, where were all the fucking Beths when I was growing up? I never encountered a mom that even like grazed her hand past my dick even one single time. And that's all I wanted out of life. Never happened for me. What was your guys' take on Beth, the mom, stepmom? Or can you explain that situation to me?
That was the only part that I thought had the chance of being a funny scene. I mean, for the greater view of this, the reason why I'm not into Jimmy Fallon is because his comedy on his show, like when I see this viral clip, I mean, I haven't clicked on one of those in years, but it at first it'd be like, oh, this is hilarious. And it was just nostalgia. Hey, let's get the Saved by the Bell gang back together in their diner. And that's what this movie is. It's a romantic comedy where there's not any funny scenes. And half of the equation of the romance, you don't like. Julie sucks. Her friends suck. So it's just like a charming Nick Cage getting dumped on for an hour and a half with some good songs. But like, if you take out the nostalgia, this movie sucks.
And what about Beth?
And the potential funny scene with Beth was when the dude tried to sneak into the shower.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, this could be funny if Beth walks in on her mom and this dude. But no, they took away the potential funny there.
But they flipped it. And he was actually into the daughter, or maybe he got the point from his encounter with Beth that it wasn't a good idea to try to pursue the mom. Was that your takeaway, Jason?
Yeah. And to address your question about Beth and her daughter, she's hotter than the daughter.
Oh yeah.
And she, and I think they're only like 7 or 8 years apart. I mean, the actress at the time, and I remember her from The Outsider, she was Cherry Vance's friend.
Unbelievable.
She's like 23 in real life, and I think the mother is like 29.
Right. They look the same age.
And then the main character's mother, the main woman character's mother,
Julie.
Again, she was about 6 years older than her, and she was her actual biological mother in the movie. It was just a strange,
kind of weird, yeah,
of adults in high school, and this wasn't a typical high school movie, and that they didn't have that that requisite like montage over a popular song with a bunch of stupid things that happen in high schools.
Yeah,
like you almost never saw the high schools until the prom. And then you realize these people are all juniors. They're right. Well into their 20s.
I wonder if that was a thing that they would do, because they're like making them have adult interactions, and it would be weird if they had like actual 17-year-olds. I mean, they couldn't really do that. So the fact that they're in high school is kind of incidental, and they don't really talk about being in high school. They're rarely at high school. And I just wonder if that's a choice to make them seem more adult.
And I do, I mean, I'll agree with Ed's point that this is no Fast Times, and Fast Times came out a year before that. And like any high school movie in the 80s, you compare it to Fast Times, and that's just not a fair comparison, because that's by far the best. But I think
this was inspired by it. Like they open up with the montage at the mall and the food court. Like they were trying to chase that.
Yeah. I'm definitely not disputing that. I think they had a better soundtrack. And I think that the Valley Girl was a thing back then. Like who had the song Valley Girl? Was it Frank Zappa or
yep.
whatever?
And Moon like, Unit. Was,
like Gag Me With a Spoon and stuff. That was like a thing. And I think that the country, like, you know,
but that was everywhere. Like
they knew the valley. Yeah.
But it is kind of weird because this movie's known for that vernacular, but now it's like so commonplace, or it's just been so long that you hear them talk like that and it's not a big deal. You're not like, oh my God, they're talking so weird. It's just like how people talk.
It's interesting how some caught on, but like others grody to the max. If somebody said that today, you'd
right.
have them sent
right.
to the hospital.
Gag me with the spoon.
But some things are just mainstream. Yep. Like some things really caught on and some didn't.
Right.
I did want to point out my favorite spotting of the cast is Julie's dad is Chef from Apocalypse Now. Hey, Captain, I want to go get some mangoes.
Right. I knew that guy looked. I knew that guy looked familiar.
Fucking cook.
Yeah. Yeah, he was kind of creeping. He basically was like, "Hey, Julie, I want to fuck your friend." They seemed kind of like they seemed like they came from a different movie. It was they had like a John Waters vibe to them.
What was the teenage movie we did? Was it Can't Buy Me Love or something where the stepdad or the father was like, man, if I was 20 years younger. I think they had the exact same line in this one.
Yeah.
And that's such a pedophile line to put into a movie. Like, there's no way in hell you could ever put that line in a movie now.
Could man, never
if I was
say that.
20 years younger, I'd be all over your friend.
Yeah, no, definitely not. There's one. So when we first encounter Nicolas Cage, he's at the beach and he's just gotten out of the ocean and he's like in some kind of like dolphin shorts, running shorts, and he's got them hiked up pretty high. And it appears that his bag is on one side of the seam and his dong is on the other side of the seam. You get a nice good look. Ed Daly, I assume you paused and zoomed in on that point in the movie. It was pretty early.
Yeah, I actually didn't check it out. Mm. I thought he looked pretty good.
Oh yeah. He has
going out in the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
Impressed.
He's a fit dude. You know, he's a young, this is before the cocaine and champagne had their way with him. Also, he's got a really nice chest patch, and I couldn't tell at first. I thought he might have been juicing the chest patch to just kind of give him a little more manliness, that it could have been a glue-on rug system, much like the time 25 years ago I went as Thomas Magnum for Halloween. I had to get a fake chest patch to juice my own. But what I realized is I think he had manicured it. Did you guys take a minute to check out the chest patch? He almost had it shaved into a heart shape. That was on purpose, right?
No doubt.
I didn't think so, but I will have to revisit.
He had it shaved to where it would stick out in those, like, those collared shirts that you could make the hair sticks out, and that's the only thing that showed. So you have to, like, use your imagination for what the hair looks like underneath. But that scene did introduce, like maybe the best character in the movie, very underrated. I think he had the best lines in the movie for sure. And he's got the most badass name in the movie, and that's Cameron Dye, which is Cage's buddy.
Fred.
Who initially finds out about the party because he overhears the two girls talking about it in the concession line.
That's a weird flex, right? Where you're like, I'm just going to show up to some party of people that I don't know. And then you think maybe it's going to be like a backyard kegger. And you're like, okay, I'll just mix in. Like, no one's going to know. I don't know anybody. And then you realize it's a fucking in the house thing with everybody from the same high school. And you just fucking cruise right in and you're like completely out of place, 100%. That's a weird and ballsy play that I probably would never have tried in high school.
And think about this, that nowadays, like, somehow they got the address, and I forget how. He overheard it, I guess. Nowadays, you put that in the GPS, and you're good. But think about the undertaking that it is in 1983 to crash a party in the residential part of the valley from Hollywood. Like, you have to get the Thomas Guide out.
Totally.
You have maps. Like, that's quite an undertaking to get to a specific residence, something that nobody in this generation could ever even fathom.
No.
Like, what's the problem?
Impossible. E6, turn to page 149, and you flip the page and you're like, okay, now I'm in this quadrant. Oh shit, I gotta go to another page. Very confusing. You're stopping to pull over quite a few times. It was a big undertaking to have to go to a different city, which is why we practically never did it.
I just pulled up the scene you were talking about of him getting out of the ocean. It does look manicured. It's nobody's chest hairs like that.
Right. It's like, he was a young, you know, he's probably like 19, 20 at the time. And it's, you know, he's obviously a guy that grows a nice patch, but it was a little early on the patch. And it seems like he shaped it up a little bit to style himself. What about the dong, Ed? Give us a review of his package. How's that looking?
That looks pretty. It looks pretty good.
Decently girthy.
I mean, he's not wearing, he's got like immediately he gets a towel draped over, but it could be serious, but the shorts are pretty high.
Yeah. He's peacocking it. That was clearly a choice.
There's going to have to be Cinnabon situation or it's going to hang out.
Right. It's got it rolled up.
Let me ask you this. And by the way, I just looked it up. Nick Cage had not turned 20 yet. He was like 18 when the movie was shot. Yeah. That's by far.
Yeah, he looked older. He looked like an older man when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, if you had to guess, Brian, what beach do you think that was? What beach would be like between the valley and in Hollywood?
So, well, I mean, if you're, the obvious choice is Malibu, but that looked like Santa Monica to me.
Yeah, it looked a little bit dirtier than a Malibu.
And I believe you could see the Palisades in the background at one point.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was Santa Monica.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it looks like Santa Monica.
Yep. Nice little visit from Les Nessman.
Oh, the driving
instructor. As the driving teacher, Les Nessman. From WKRP.
This movie didn't have many slapstick, stupid comedy moments like a lot of those 80s high school movies did. That was one of them. That them driving around in a ridiculous circle with the background obviously fake. They're in some kind of like, you know, car that had scenery in the background.
Yep.
And then he just dove out of the car when it was too much for him.
Well, how could that be the system of driver's ed where every car is 1 inch from the car? They're like, hey, let's this. I've been getting into F1 and somebody in our audience explained this to me. In F1, when they go out to qualify, they all go out at the same time. So like in NASCAR or IndyCar racing, they just go out. You go out and you do your fastest lap and that's your qualifying. In F1, they're all out there together. They just like they stagger them out apart. So there's got like you're like not they're not passing, but there's all the cars are on the track together. How are you going to have 16-year-old girls trying to get their license and there's 37 cars in a parking lot all following each other around the same set of cones? That's insane. Would never happen.
But the thing is, it wasn't cones. It literally was, unless I was mistaken, it looked like she was doing donuts. If you kind of look at what she was doing, they did the test with friends in the back seat that she was turning around and talking to, and she was doing donuts.
When we did summer school, weren't people in the back seat as well?
Yeah, there were people in the back seat, but at least they went on the road, which is what you do when you go get your license. You don't drive all together in a parking lot. The parents own a health food restaurant, which I remember being it's like a health food store where they'll make you a sandwich. I remember that was very much a thing in the 80s. There was one of those in every town with some fucking dirty hippies selling wheatgrass shots.
Terrible.
Yes.
And terrible always.
But it is kind of weird where she's like, this food is disgusting. It's supposed to be good for you. It tastes like nothing. And I'm like, well, that's just a nice salad. Like there's nothing wrong with that food. It's weird that like carrots and kale and very healthy things were considered disgusting at the time. The more disgusting thing is that the dad is working, running the restaurant
without shoes.
And the fucking guy's wearing sandals.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
Do you think
you can't look at somebody's toes while they're making food?
Sandals that he bought at Woodstock that are falling apart. His greasy, disgusting sandals, and he's the proprietor of the place. It's not like he's a fucking busboy. It's not like he's Blue Lou from the Blues Brothers. He owns the joint, and his dirty feet are out there.
Just came back from Vietnam.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
And think about it. Think about like I understand screenplay writers have to do some kind of dialogue to get information. You know, they just can't.
It's called exposition. So you know that you're an actor.
I understand that they had to work the fact in that he went to Woodstock as a hippie, but that him breaking his shoe had zero to do with the plot.
Right.
That zero to do with the scene. It was a weird way to get him to say that he went to Woodstock.
Right. And the March on Washington. He bought his Earth shoes for the March on Washington, which were very much of that time as well.
And he gives terrible advice. He's a very sweet dad in that he talks about her listening to her heart and do this and that. And then he's like, but if your friends tell you this guy's an asshole, go be with a buck who likes to fuck. Like he won't help her out.
Yeah, that wasn't a great father-daughter interaction. At one point, they do a montage of the valley. So there's like Dupars and Casa Vega. But I did notice they also flashed to a Winchell's donut sign on their valley tour, which begs the question, is that the same Winchell's where Buck Swope's fortunes changed? Do we have a little crossover in the Valley movie world? Is that where Buck Swope found his fortune?
It was around the same time.
Yes,
right? It was right,
right
around.
Right.
Very much, right? Because 1980 had come and gone. She was pregnant. Yeah, it was probably the exact same Winchell's.
That was interesting.
By the way, Fred, the buddy,
Cameron Dye.
He was terrifying though. He was a good friend, but when he's chasing, when they go on that awful initial double date,
little rapey.
He's chasing her. He's rapey. He's a little creepy looking. I looked him up. He has a child with Laura San Giacomo.
Oh. Got some of that.
I don't know if he was married or not, but yeah, he worked, but he kind of looks like the friend in Weird Science. I mean,
no,
Weird
Science. I think he is the friend in Weird Science.
I looked it up. Yeah. I don't think he was the guy, but he looks like
the female lead. No, not Weird Science. The female lead was in Real Genius.
Right.
Yeah, I looked her up.
And I think he was in Real Genius too, because it the same writer or same director or something.
Well, Real Genius, she was the daughter of the head of the something, and she was the one who asked him if Val Kilmer, if he could hammer a six inch spike through a board with his penis, and he goes, right. Not right now.
but that scene that we're talking about with Fred chasing around the friend around the car, if anyone's ever been to Disneyland, who laid off 28,000 people today, if anyone's ever been to Pirates of the Caribbean at Disneyland,
of course.
And you see the pirates before they became politically correct and reversed roles, they had pirates chasing around maidens in order to rape them.
That's implied.
He chased her around probably 50 circles around the car, and then they would go to them making out in the car, but it was just strange. But I do like that it was on Mulholland. That's kind of a badass.
She was the bummer friend, and bummer friend is a personality type. We've all known this person. Like, you can, and I get it, he was chasing around a little bit, but he was harmless. You can play wingman. You know, you can have
He was a good wingman. In the end, he saves the day.
No, he's a good wingman. It's her friend that just can't. She's like, I'm not. She's complaining the whole time in the car. Like, they're driving through Hollywood. Like, they know people in Hollywood. Like, it would be kind of an exciting evening to step out of your comfort zone and, like, see something a little bit different. They're being nice enough guys. Yeah, Fred's a little creepy. He's got only the front of his hair dyed red.
He's a lot creepy.
Yeah.
He's a lot creepy, but yeah, go with it a little bit.
Right. Just let it run.
Dottie from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, yeah. Dottie makes out with Tommy and lets him feel her up.
Immediately.
She's like,
I want to be the fuck
who likes
to fuck. Yeah. I was going to say, were they implying that they did have sex or they did not?
They didn't.
She went right to being topless.
No, and she's like, does this mean we're going together? And immediately he loses his erection. He
puts on the brakes.
Right, like all men. We're like, whoa,
nobody
whoa.
Needs to know about this.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say this. So as you brought up his romantic line in the bathroom, and the way he talked to her was like, she's like, where would we go? He's like, anywhere. I just want to be with you. As long as you're there, I'm there. And so he had the great romantic lines, and that would be good if he didn't, for the next 20 minutes of the movie, spend it ignoring her and just, like, completely being aloof and then waving to buddies on the streets of Hollywood Boulevard. And then when they get into the club with the cool music, he spends most of that time ignoring her there. Watching he didn't really back up his words with actions. In other words, there wasn't a whole lot in that initial scene of them being together. There wasn't a whole lot of attention from him. And maybe that was the game. Maybe the aloof thing, the hard to get thing, you know, Hollywood outcast thing. Maybe he was playing that character. But I did find it interesting that his actions didn't back up his words in that regard.
It was also interesting that the hippie parents were like, go out, live your life, and real mixed messages, because then Julie gets home and the parents have waited up all night. The dad's smoking cigarettes, which he's ashing into an abalone shell. Like, if you're going back and you're making a movie about the 80s, obviously you're going to have the dad ashing his cigarette into an abalone shell. But in the 80s, you didn't know that the abalone shell ashtray would be such a fucking iconic item that you would need to include it at the time.
That's true.
I almost
forgot about it.
Yeah, it's weird that they're sending mixed messages, because they're like, come back on Tuesday. Like, we got to let you live your life. Go out and fuck. Like, you know, be free. And then she comes home and they're all pissed off at her.
Yeah, and I will say this too. There was a scene at the party where the jock boyfriend. One review, and it may have been Roger Ebert. I don't know. It was just a review written on the 30th anniversary. Called the boyfriend, Michael Bowen, prerequisite asshole boyfriend, which I thought was a great description. So he sees Nick Cage hitting on his girl at the party.
Yeah.
And he walks up to him, cold cocks him, and then has his boys hold him down, and he punches him in the stomach.
Yep.
And this guy has the balls later on in the movie to be like, do you want me to kick your ass again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like cold cock and have your buddies hold him down.
Right.
That
was you know who he also was? He was the Nazi uncle in Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He was real bad.
Right.
I do remember that.
Todd's uncle. Ed Daly's uncle. What else? So at one point, we already kind of alluded to that. Skip is the grocery boy that kind of has the chance to fuck the mom, and which is a turn I'm upset this movie didn't take. But he, at one point, he cruises up on his 10-speed with the handlebars turned up, and he's like, hey, I'm just going to stop by. Not only does he stop by, fucking guy just lets himself in the house. And not only does he just let himself in the house, he fucking goes upstairs. And not only does he go upstairs, he goes in a bedroom and in a bathroom where somebody's taking a shower. Luckily, it works out for him. I don't know that that's ever worked out. I know things were a little different in 1983. I know that, you know, maybe the cops wouldn't be involved. I know that, you know, there wasn't as much empowerment back then, whatever. But then later in the movie, Randy, Nick Cage, he fucking stops by Julie's house, and it's like 10 o'clock at night. He knocks on the door, and she's like, hey, what are you doing here? This is when she's decided to be a bitch to him and get back with Tommy, which right. is, at this point, Randy should have washed it. Like, he's running around Hollywood. He's fucking chicks in the bathroom. Like, he's got game. But no, he's smitten. He stops by. She's like, I'm about to go to bed. What was going on in the 1980s? I get we didn't have cell phones. There was no texting. This I understand. What was up with all this stopping by? Who just shows up at somebody's house? Yeah, that was never allowed.
No, that was a thing.
Of course it was, because when you would hear the doorbell, if you hear a doorbell or a knocking now, it's kind of terrifying. Like, what does somebody want? But it used to be that's what people did.
Think about it. Think about it.
Yeah.
If you were calling on someone's landline, and if they had a little bit of money, they had an answering machine. But most people didn't. So you're sitting there waiting for someone to pick up a landline. They're not answering. Maybe you even get a busy signal because the little sister's on the phone and it's just busy. There's no other thing to do than to just drive to their place. Like, that was a thing. I'm just fascinated that he was able to get around the way he did and had the sense of direction to do it. And it just made me remember that nobody has sense of direction anymore. This movie reminded me that people actually went places and got places without a GPS. I don't know why that's so, I guess, fascinating to me.
It is kind of crazy. And I drive to the Valley a lot these days. And I GPS it, obviously. I use the Google Maps mostly to get me there. But now that I've driven that drive so many times, I can do it without the... And it's like five different freeways. It's like several freeways. It's side streets. It's a whole thing. Yeah. I know the shortcuts. I know if there's going to be traffic here to go this way. I know the ways to go. But I was thinking to myself the other day, there's very few places I know how to get anymore because... You don't have to do that. We've lost our sense of direction because we never have to use it anymore. We're always being given directions by little machines, little computers in our pockets.
And you had a Rolodex in your mind of people's phone numbers. And
crazy.
I could tell you one person's phone number. But anyways, I hate being like the old guys telling people to go off their line. So I will say this. You mentioned the montage, how they go through, you know, they show all the Valley sites, and then they show Cage and her kind of being lovey-dovey. And this is when they introduced the world to I Melt With You by Modern English.
Yeah.
Now, at that time, obviously, it was introduced to the world and it became an amazing song. K-Rock played it a lot. And then everybody since then has been played it in a nostalgic way. It's in commercials. I need to point out one thing about that song, because everyone's heard it 10,000 times and they probably just sing this lyric without even thinking about it. But the second line to the entire song is always kind of has always been frustrating to me. So if you remember the line, it starts off moving forward using all my breath, right? That's fine. Mm-hmm. The second line is making love to you was never second best.
That's right.
Now, first of all, best doesn't rhyme with breath. Or it's not, at the very least, it doesn't. It's not spelled the same. But
it rhymes in the middle.
But if you're trying to pay a compliment,
yeah,
I know they had to get they had to fit something in there that kind of rhymed with breath, and then they chose best. But if you're never second best, that leaves you a lot of wiggle room. Like, obviously, you could be number one, but you could also be three, 50. There's a lot of wiggle room there. Never second best.
I get it. I think the implication is, though, that you would be above second. But I get what you're saying. He's semantically, if she's ever like, oh, hold up. You said I was never second best. He could be like, well, that's true. But I never said you were first best.
It reminds me of my most confusing line of an 80s song, All By Myself by Eric Carmody. He's talking about the way it used to be. And he said, back when making love was just for fun. Well, what's he up to now? Is he a gigolo?
He doesn't.
What's he doing?
He's a rapist.
making love for money. Yeah, that's funny.
Unbelievable. Okay, a couple more. Oh, one thing that freaked me out. At one point, they showed Julie going to sleep. And I think it was after.
Oh, that doll?
Yes. She goes to bed and she sleeps with a terrifying clown baby doll, and it appears to be like one of those porcelain dolls. So I don't know about you guys, but I occasionally roll over in my sleep. Imagine rolling over on that face and having it shatter into your ribs, slivers of porcelain in your ribs. You might have to go to the hospital. How scary was that? What'd you guys think of the doll?
It sticks out for sure. Like,
it's
that's
weird.
That's an ugly ass doll.
Yeah.
But it must have had some meaning to the director or something. Why would that be? There was no reason for that to be in the movie.
It was a little weird. Yeah, it was because you could have got any doll. Like, dolls were considered scary back then, too, right? And clowns. It was a clown doll.
It would be a simple prop in a scene if it was just like a stuffed dog. But they made it so that doll stole the scene. It was so off-putting. So there must have been a reason why they did it. I just have no idea why.
Yeah, it had to be like a behind the scenes thing. And I know we've talked about this, but Nick Cage, he's Randy. He's the hero of the movie. She dumps him basically for no reason. She basically does the whole "you're not good enough for me" thing. I'm going to go back with Tommy, who's a real douche.
I liked his line when she dumped him.
What'd he say?
He goes, "Fuck off. For sure. Like, totally."
Yeah. then he makes all these grand gestures. I mean, it's a little stalkery, but he like shows up and he's taking tickets at the movies. He's the car hop. He's serving the food.
By the way, I think the director or the writer wanted us to believe that he was incognito, that simply putting sunglasses on would make him unidentifiable to the boyfriend that has already kicked his ass.
It's great. Yeah.
Very noticeable sunglasses.
Right. Yeah. In both, like, one, he just has 3D movies in, and Tommy's like, is this movie in 3D? And he's like, no, but you are. And like pushed him or something. Like, what? That was a weird, you'd be like, what is wrong with this fucking ticket taker? Can I speak to the manager, please? What was that? And then he's got like Hunter S. Thompson, like serial killer, like shooting glasses on when he's the car hop. It's very clear. He's not hiding his face at all. It's obvious who he is. There's no confusion that this is Randy, your rival. Very confusing.
And then he sleeps in a tent outside her.
No, he doesn't sleep in a tent. He sleeps on the fucking lawn in a sleeping bag.
Oh, that's right. But I mean, it was very like we've seen that before. Kuzak did that. Yeah. 6 years later.
I'll tell you right now. There's no woman's worth sleeping outside. Just all there is to it. Like there's just certain things I won't do. Like I'll do pretty much anything unless it involves sleeping outside and or attending a live performance of Hamilton.
But when you say there's pretty much nothing I could do, would you stop the world and melt with you?
I would if I could. Because that's about coming. Like, I would do that. I definitely would ejaculate with you. And I would try to make you have an orgasm as well. So in that sense, yes, I would definitely do that. Okay, some details. The club scenes where Randy takes Julie were filmed at a Sunset Strip club originally named Filthy McNasties.
That's a great name.
Yes. Oh, later became the what? Anyone?
The Roxy.
Viper Room.
Oh, River
Hey.
Phoenix.
Yes. Yeah. Where River Phoenix infamously died on Halloween 1993. Nicolas Cage had a real-life crush on co-star Deborah Foreman. He later admitted in an interview, "I just adored Deborah, so there was very little acting on my part." That means he got her. Cage would write her poetry on set, and one poem was titled "American Girl," which Foreman still has to this day. This is the first movie where he was billed as Nicolas Cage. Ed, you like this one? The script was written in 10 days. When Randy, Nicolas Cage, and Fred are...
What did they do with the 9.5 days then?
...are in the hills overlooking the valley, Randy takes a Wowie whistle from his shirt pocket. Wowie whistles were novelty... I was wondering what that was.
What the hell was that?
Were novelty harmonicas made from orange chewing wax and were popular Halloween treats... During the 1970s and early...
Vaguely remember that.
That's like fucking getting raisins, dude. Some chewable... Remember wax lips?
That shit just went right back on the roof.
What are you going to do with that?
You got raisins, yes. You did the old Gone. Kareem hookshot onto Gone. The roof.
Gone. I actually kind of enjoyed getting... When you'd go to like a dentist's house and he would give you a toothbrush. Did you guys ever have that? Mm-hmm. I kind of like that because I'm like, I could use another toothbrush.
You know, you can always use one for an away trip.
Yeah.
Just to have a spare.
Yeah, when I go spend the night at one of my friend's house or something, I got an extra toothbrush and don't have to worry if I forget it.
Give out some pennies.
Worse. Those got thrown back at you.
But you have to admit, dentists, they generally make pretty good money. And giving away free samples is really kind of a cheap move if they have the cash.
Yeah, that's true.
Like full-size Snickers.
That's true. Because dentists are usually doing pretty well. The dentists are doing a lot of upcharging. You got to watch out for those guys. In the making of documentary on the 20th anniversary DVD, which I'm sure Ed has, Elizabeth Daly, no relation, admitted that she had no idea how to talk like a Valley girl. I feel like that's something you could have studied for 5 minutes, but when you got the job. To cover this up, she decided that her character, Lauren, would not actually be from the Valley, but from nearby Malibu instead. Wow, that's pretty lazy.
Big difference.
I guess when she's like, "Look, guys, I don't know how to say for sure and like a lot, so I'm just gonna. What if I show my tits?" And the producers are like, "Actually, that's a really good idea. Get them out."
You know what's kind of sad about Dottie is I remember it was only a couple of years ago. Michelle called me into the room. It was either on, I think it was The Voice or one of those kind of shows. She was trying to make it as a singer, like 2 years ago.
Oh, really? She's got to be in her 50s.
Yeah, but it was weird. She's like, "Do you recognize her?" And I was like, "That's Dottie."
Yeah, Dottie.
She looked great, and she had a nice voice, but come on. It's not going to happen for you.
By the way, last time I checked, if an actress told the movie makers that she doesn't quite know how to get the accent down, I think there's like 10,000 women they could probably hire. Like if Meryl Streep went to her director and said, "I can't quite do a Polish Jew for this part," I think they would just replace her with somebody who can. Like, why was this actress so important that they changed the character to be from somewhere else?
I think Brian was right. She
got him out.
Give, to get them out.
She got those suckers out. Speaking of movie accents, Jason Stewart, maybe you could speak to this movie accent from the fantastic Lifetime movie, Everything She Ever Wanted. Of course, this movie stars our friend Jason Stewart and his co-star Gina Gershon. She's walking into a strip club right now. She's looking very pensive. She walks up to the bar. Jay Stu's got a boiler. Hold on, I talked over the line. I tried to hit the post.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Debbie.
She your friend?
She's my daughter.
You want to do a mother-daughter routine? Name your price.
If you could just show me where she is, please.
Wow. Jay Stu, really like one of your finest moments, the head nod where you nod like over to where Debbie might be hanging out. Fantastic performance as always, as all of your Lifetime. And of course, USA movie performances are.
Think about what went into the head nod. And that was an improvisational one. And the head nod was to the guard in front of the champagne room. It was the let her in head nod, like she's good.
She was in there giving HJs, is what you're saying, right? Oh, got you.
A little ski pole.
Amazing. This is one of Kevin Smith's favorite movies of all time. In fact, when Kevin Smith's wife, Jennifer Schwalbach Smith, go ahead and lose the Schwalbach, please.
The grossest tweet of all time.
Went into labor. Valley Girl was taken with them to the hospital to watch while going through labor. The producers of,
I know this is one of Tarantino's favorites.
Is it? The producers of this film approached Frank Zappa about making a film based on his hit single Valley Girl, but he refused, leading the producers to make the film without his involvement. Zappa sued, but
no
lost
song.
The case. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously they didn't play a song.
Yeah. I saw this. When Randy and Julie first enter the music club, the upcoming gigs list advertises the Plimsolls, who appear in the same scene, and Katie Sagal, Peg Bundy.
Mm. Oh.
What else? Oh.
I read in the credits just one of the guys. She must have been one of the party goers.
Yeah.
Heiser.
Right. When Lee Purcell, the beautiful stepmom, says plastics to Skip, it's a reference to The Graduate, about a younger man's affair with an older woman fantasy. She's obviously throwing him a hint that she's trying to seduce him, like in that movie, which he, loser, obviously isn't familiar with. Julie's parents are played by Colleen Camp and Frederick Forrest. The two also appear together in Apocalypse Now. Where Forrest was a soldier and Camp, who was friends in real life with Playboy playmate Dorothy Stratton,
was she one of the bunnies?
Was a playmate sent to entertain the troops.
Wow. Didn't Chef get decapitated at the end of that movie?
Yes.
Is there a connection between Nick Cage and those two actors, given the fact that his uncle directed?
Good point. Good point. One of Quentin Tarantino's favorite romantic movies. Despite being a movie partially about punk rock, there is no punk rock on the movie soundtrack, just new wave post-punk music. Oh, here you go. And this is upgrade. Michelle Pfeiffer was originally considered for the role of Julie.
Oof, that would have been a big upgrade.
I see that for sure.
Yeah. Director Martha Coolidge was required by the film's producers to show female breasts at least four times. They felt it would make the movie more appealing to younger males and guys in their mid-40s. Check. The iconic poster image still used on the DVD and Blu-ray artwork of Nicolas Cage and Julie is not Deborah Foreman, but the actress Tina Thaberge. Household name, who wound up playing Randy's nightclub lover before Foreman was cast. Interesting.
Wait, hold on a second. I was looking at the cover and saying, that doesn't look a thing like her.
You nailed it.
He's not dressed or look a thing like what he's dressed in the movie.
Right.
It's almost like they went like 5 years ahead of time and got two different people. So you're telling me that the poster for this movie does not include the female lead. It's that random chick he had sex with.
That he bangs in the bathroom.
Oh, and there were some really gross, loud kissing noises in that scene. It was too much.
Mm,
too much of that.
Yeah.
Like just gross sounds.
The movie was produced before Nicolas Cage got his teeth fixed. I'm sure we all noticed that. He had little tiny spaced out chiclets. He should have kept that look, by the way. That looks, it's much more distinctive than the big fake veneers he ended up with.
Sure.
After Julie and Tommy are dropped off at the prom and Randy and Fred look at the car and chauffeur, the chauffeur is reading a copy of Variety with a full page ad on the back for Paul Bartel's Eating Raul, which came out a year earlier. Who cares?
That's some good trivia.
While cruising down Hollywood Boulevard, there's an Empire Strikes Back advertisement. What up, nerds? Released in 1980 and released in 1982 and 1983. What's that mean? It came out three times?
Oh, back then? That's what they did. They used to just... Yeah, I mean, they would probably had, like, Snow White come out.
Right.
They didn't have enough content back then.
Well, because that makes sense, because I remember seeing Star Wars in the theater, but it came out in 77 or 78.
Yeah, me too. I didn't know when I was one.
That makes sense.
And that was the, I want to say that was the Man's Chinese Theater that they drove by. And I think that was, and I think still is, like a movie house that they don't necessarily play modern movies as much as they play like popular movies.
Right. Much like the Cinerama Dome. Frederick Forrest leaves the lens cap on when he takes Julie's prom picture. Dennis Hopper did the same thing in Apocalypse Now, which Forrest also co-starred in 4 years earlier.
How about that? Interesting.
Song playing when Randy and Fred enter the house party is called Fantastic or Fanatic. Can't read. By Felony. Uncredited on the soundtrack for one reason or another. Interesting. In the dating montage scene, Randy and Julie share a long, deep kiss in front of the marquee for the movie Romeo and Juliet. Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet. We had to watch that in ninth grade English. One of the inspirations for this tale of star-crossed lovers. They show one boob in that movie, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Randy and Fred. Okay, that's enough. Dupar's restaurant where the girls frequent and where Julie Richmond and Randy have their first date was filmed only a quarter mile from a scene in the Fast Times at Ridgemont High where Brad Hamilton is making a delivery in a pirate costume.
Oh, Captain Hook, Fish and Chips.
Right. What else? You guys want to know? Let's talk about how much money this made. How much couldn't have cost much to shoot, right? There's no names in it. There's no expensive locations. There's no special effects.
And the music, the rights to that music, like that was not popular music.
No.
That was like, you know, new wave K-rock music.
Totally. Totally. Let's see here.
It couldn't have cost more than like $4 million bucks.
Budget. Ed Daly, do you have a guess?
I'm going to say... Back then, I don't know. It had to be like $4 million, $3
million. $350,000 this movie was made for.
Holy shit.
Cumulative gross, nearly $18 million. Rotten Tomatoes. Any guesses, Ed Daly?
I don't know how someone could like this movie. The soundtrack is good. You know, they throw in... I'll Melt With You, Electric Avenue, but I gotta think it's in the low teens.
Jason Stewart?
I read a review by Roger Ebert, and he loved it. He was effusive in his praise. I know that it's a huge cult movie. I know that my best friend's sister growing up watched it like 10 times a week. I'm probably going to say audience score is higher than the critics. I'll go like 68 audience... 58 critic.
Roger Ebert said, "This movie is a little treasure, a funny, sexy, dude, I cannot read. Appealing story of a valley girl's heartbreaking decision. Should she stick with her boring jock boyfriend or take a chance on a punk from Hollywood?" I don't really agree with Roger there, although I did like the movie. With the critics, tomato meter, certified fresh, 83%.
Holy shit.
Slightly lower with the audience, 72%. Very popular, classic movie. Loved by many.
Very high. That's very high.
That's very high. Even good movies are in the 60s.
A foreign thing to people? If you think about the story, we've talked about it. It's Romeo and Juliet without the drama of his family and his most of the people are not likable at all. I don't get it. I don't get the appeal of this movie.
The
aside from nostalgia.
I wonder if they shot stuff with his family. They had to have. They shot stuff with his family and it just didn't make it into the movie.
And I think too, like looking back at it now, there's a lot of like really like clumsy things, dated things and everything. But I think at the time when they came out, I think if you compare that to like Porky's and a couple of those really teen movies,
yeah,
I think that it was kind of like a more intelligent, like more nuanced teen movie because. It wasn't real high on the comedy. This was like a romantic movie with some funny scenes.
Yes.
And those other ones were like comedies making fun of high school people.
I didn't know what to expect. I thought it would be more of a farcical, like big gags type of movie, right. Like more like hanging out at the mall, like being ridiculous. And it is a very like earnest sort of sweet movie. I actually did kind of enjoy it. It got a little slow through the middle, which is pretty common for back then. But overall, I was a fan. I liked it. I was actually sitting there watching it going, I'm enjoying watching this movie. I wouldn't have expected that I would, but I liked it very much.
By the way, yes. a shout out to the Psych Furs, one of my favorite bands from that era.
Yeah.
I saw them in a, there was a, remember Richard Blade put on a bunch of these like way bitchin' 80s bands or whatever. And Psych Furs was there, OMD, Belinda Carlisle. And I had like 10th row tickets.
Yeah.
And it was so much better when I would close my eyes and listen to the music. It would like take me back to the 80s.
Yeah.
But if you get an up close look at Butler and the Psych Furs nowadays, they literally look like skeletons.
Well, they're pretty old. Right.
Music. Yes.
Imagine.
But they sound great.
Yeah.
The music sounds great still. So I suggest if you're going to see the Psych Furs, whenever this pandemic thing ends, just close your eyes.
I think they pretty regularly play a gig at the Orange County Fair, which I often attend, although it's canceled this year or was. Okay. Anything else to add either of you?
Oh, how about the fact that it ends with he steals the girl during a food fight? What?
Right, I hate food fights.
Yes.
Food fight.
Yeah.
What? At the prom?
Right.
What's going on?
Yeah, that was very much a staple. Food fights. I feel like every third 80s movie had a food fight in it, and the prom was always involved. And I really I feel like the dad was like sending the daughter off to lose her virginity at the prom. Like, did you?
I wanted it to happen.
Yeah,
really
that was weird. That was a whole weird thing.
And to Ed's point, I mean, there was a flaw in the plot in the writing was she made the wrong choice. She chose the superficial popularity over him, which was the wrong choice morally.
Totally.
And the only reason she changed course was because he went and stole her at the prom
and took
the limo that her boyfriend paid for back to the hotel that her boyfriend paid for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, she's terrible.
That's how the movie ends.
Yeah. That's actually pretty good. Okay. Jason Stewart, explain something to me. I've got the, you're the resident sports expert. I'm watching the Indians Yankees play right now. And the first thing I would like to say is that I'm very glad this person called Franmil Reyes doesn't want to sexually assault me, because if he wanted to, he would be able to very easily because he's massive. Secondly, the second thing I thought about, they show in the corner the other playoff games that are coming up, and it says the Marlins and the Cubs. Didn't the Marlins get COVID this year and play like 28 less games than everybody else?
They did. And
they're in the playoffs?
Like half the league made the playoffs.
Still, you're putting the team that didn't play nearly as many games got in the playoffs? There's like, how about just get COVID for the whole season and play two series and win them both, and then you have the highest winning percentage and you go to the playoffs? What's happening here? Jason Stewart, can you explain?
I think I had read where even with the COVID thing, which seemed to take like 3 weeks, no team played, like if 60 games was the max, like no team played less than like 55 on the season. I think.
Oh, so they made them up.
Yeah. With those seven inning double head.
Oh, right. Okay. That makes sense. See,
and by the way, yeah. I'm looking at the Indians game in Cleveland. No sign of Chief Wahoo and his massive teeth and bright red skin.
Chief Wahoo has thankfully been canceled. The only place you're going to see him anymore is in the movie Major League, which we reviewed recently on the show.
Yep.
Yeah. So RIP Chief Wahoo. It was time. Okay. That's it for a daily for special guest Jason Stewart. My name is Brian Beckner. This has been episode 340. Of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. We'll see you next week. The lifestyle's baller. Podcast getting bigger and not smaller. Broadcasting weekly, that's what we do. With Easy Ed Daily and a man Jay Stu and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Not just my brothers, reviewing some movies and shows and others. Top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS.